バスデバヤ、オムナモバガバテバスデバヤ、オムナモバガバテバスデバヤ。Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, 18th Chapter, Text 22. Mat praptaye jesha sura sura dayas Tapyanta ugram tapa aindriye diya Rite bhavat pada parayanan namam Vindanti aham tvadridaya yato jita Mat praptaye yesha sura sura dayas Tapyanta yugram tapa aindriye diya Rite bhavat pada parayanan namam Vindantyaham tvadridaya yato jita Mat praptaye jesha sura sura dayas Tapyanta ugram tapa aindriye diya Rite bhavat pada parayanam namam Vindanti aham tvadridaya yato jita Others, please. Ladies. my praptaye, to obtain my mercy. Aja, Lord Brahma. Isha, Lord Shiva. Sura, the other demigods headed by King Indra. Chandra and Varuna. Asura Adaya, as well as the demons. Tapyante, undergo. Ugram, severe. Tapa, austerity. Andriyadiya, whose minds are absorbed in thoughts of superior sense gratification. Rite, unless. Bhavat pada parayanat, one who is wholly and solely engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Na, not. Mam, me. Bindati, obtain. Aham, I. Twat, in you. Ridaya, whose hearts. Yataha, therefore. Ajita, O unconquerable one. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Supreme, unconquerable Lord, when they become... This is Lakshmi Devi speaking. O Supreme, unconquerable Lord, when they become absorbed in thoughts of material enjoyment, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as well as other demigods and demons, undergo severe penances and austerities to receive my benedictions. But I do not favor anyone, however great he may be, unless he is always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Because I always keep you within my heart, I cannot favor anyone but a devotee. Purport. In this verse, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, clearly states that she does not bestow her favor on any materialistic person. Although sometimes a materialist becomes very opulent in the eyes of another materialist, such opulence is bestowed upon him by the goddess Durga Devi, a material expansion of the goddess of fortune, not Lakshmi Devi herself. Those who desire material wealth worship Durga Devi with the following mantra. Dhanam dehi, rupam dehi, rupapati bhajam dehi. O worshipable Mother Durga Devi, please give me wealth, strength, fame, a good wife, and so on. By pleasing Goddess Durga, one can obtain such benefits. But since they are temporary, they result only in maya sukaya, illusory happiness. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, maya sukaya baram udvahato vimudhan. Those who work very hard for material benefits are vimudhas, foolish rascals, because such happiness will not endure. On the other hand, devotees like Prahlad and Dhruva Maharaj achieved extraordinary material opulences, but such opulences were not maya sukha. When a devotee acquires unparalleled opulences, they are the direct gifts of the goddess of fortune who resides in the heart of Narayan. The material opulences a person obtains by offering prayers to the goddess Durga are temporary, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 23, Antabat tupalam tesham tadbhavati alpamedasam. Men of meager intelligence desire temporary happiness. We have actually seen that one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to enjoy the property of his spiritual master, and the spiritual master, being merciful toward him, gave him the temporary property, but not the power to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. That special mercy of the power to preach is given to a devotee who does not want anything material from his spiritual master, but wants only to serve him. The story of the demon Ravana illustrates this point. Although Ravana tried to abduct the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, from the custody of Lord Ramachandra, he could not possibly do so. The Sita Devi he forcibly took with him was not the original Sita Devi, but an expansion of Maya, or Durga Devi. As a result, instead of winning the favor of the real goddess of fortune, Ravana and his whole family were vanquished by the power of Durgadevi. Shristi Stiti Palaya Sadhana Saktireka. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimbadi Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharini Nivashesha Sunyavadi Paschacharadi Shatarini Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pavuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiti Gaudavani Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay. So I'm not sure if I'm supposed to start giving class now. Or let the control tower know that I'm ready for takeoff. It's something to get used to here, but I guess I'm supposed to give class. So Lord Chaitanya was on his tour of South India, and at one point he stopped off in the home of this one Brahmin. His name was Ramdas Vipra. So he was a nice Brahmin, and Lord Chaitanya, they were talking for a while and everything, and, you know, the understanding was that Ramdas Vipra was going to host Lord Chaitanya for lunch. So Lord Chaitanya, when he woke up, he did his normal morning duties and everything, and then it came around lunchtime, you know, midday, 12 o'clock, and he did his Gayatri, and he took his bath and, you know, all those things, and he noticed that it was, you know, no lunch being served, and he looked and he saw that nothing was even being done in the kitchen. You know, there was no preparation going on. So, and then he looked around further and he saw that Ramdas Vipra, his host, was just kind of moping around, looking very depressed and everything. And then humbly he went around to him and he goes, "Well, hi, what's up? This is not verbatim, but, you know, what's happening?" And he said, Ravana has abducted Mother Sita, the universal mother, and he's put his hands on her, and he's defiled her, and I'm so disturbed, you know, by this, the thought of this is just like so disturbing, I'm depressed, I can't do anything. And this was like his mood, you know? And it was genuine. He wasn't just putting on a show or anything like that. He was genuinely feeling like that. So Lord Chaitanya did his best to, help him. He preached to him and he tried to explain different things to him. Actually, I couldn't find the first part of this story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I was only able to find the second part, so I don't remember exactly what Lord Chaitanya said to him, whether he actually told him that, you know, the reality of the situation was that Mother Sita, the real Mother Sita wasn't touched by Ravana. She disappeared immediately, you know, and then the Maya Sita appeared, or I can't remember how he preached him, but anyway, he was able to pacify him enough so that he decided, okay, let's get on with what we got to do here. And he prepared Lord Chaitanya's lunch, and they had lunch late. And then Lord Chaitanya departed. Some time passed, and later on, Lord Chaitanya was also in South India, further south. And he came, he was in the Setu Bandha, actually. Setu Bandha, and he visited a temple of Lord Shiva called Rameshwar. And in that temple he obtained a copy of the Brahma Samhita and a copy of the Krishna Karnamrita, and he also stumbled upon something very interesting. You know, he found the copy of the Korma Purana, and he was reading through it, and he just happened to notice, you know, that there was a page there where it was explained exactly, specifically how when Ravana went to abduct Mother Sita, immediately she disappeared, and Amaya Sita became present. And then, he never touched the actual, you know, Sita Devi. And the proof of this was when Ram regained Sita, and as a test of her chastity, Sita entered into the fire, and Agni Dev, the demigod in control of fire, came out with a real Sita like that. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya found that section of the Korma Purana, in the Korma Purana. And it says that with the permission of the temple commander, he took the Brahma Samhita and the Krishna Karmrita. So I'm assuming that he also had the permission of the temple commander to take that page. And he took that page, and at a later date, when he returned, passed back through that part of South India where Ramdas Vipra was, he showed him that page. And Ramdas Vipra was very happy, and that his unhappiness went away, is how it's described. So he became convinced of that this particular point here. So Ravana, he was trying to have the kingdom of God without God, at least have the consort of God without God. And of course, we know that Prabhupada describes the end result here. He was vanquished. He was vanquished. So he didn't get his desired result. He didn't get to enjoy as he was hoping he would, but rather totally, quite the contrary. He was totally destroyed. And that's what happens. Prabhupada gives this as an example, and he also gives this other example here of from his own experience. Prabhupada gives the example of something that happened between his spiritual master and one of the disciples. And I think that what he's referring to is the situation that took place at going into the last days of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj's life. That he wasn't happy. He wasn't completely satisfied. He wasn't satisfied at all with a lot of his disciples. He felt that they weren't developing into preachers like he had hoped they would, and they had a lot of material desires that they were harboring. And just before he passed away, he gave an instruction to them, and he also included this very same instruction in his will, that they should form a 12-man governing body commission, and that's the way they should manage the affairs of the Gaudiya Math from that point onwards, in terms of managing the spiritual issues and the other issues like that. So when he departed, some of these senior disciples, they met and they discussed and everything, and unfortunately they rejected that idea. They rejected that idea to form the 12-man governing body commission, and they decided, no, we should appoint one acharya. So that Prabhupada said, as soon as they did that, they became asar, useless, because they deviated from the instruction of the spiritual master. So then immediately the question became, well, who would be the next acharya? And there were two personalities who were sort of like in the running, so to speak. One, his name was Ananta Vasudev. He was a sannyasi and, kind of a fired-up preacher. And he was the more popular of the two. And then the other one's name was Kunjavihari, who was, I believe he was a grihastha, actually, but I'm not 100% positive of that. But he was the secretary of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj before he passed away. So he was, had a lot of interaction with him in terms of the business issues, being his secretary. And he was the other person. And he was more interested in the properties. At that point he had already was holding the titles or the deeds for some of the major properties, like that temple at the Bog Bazaar, the marble temple that Bhaktisiddhanta referred to as he was revealed his mind to Srila Prabhupada once, that actually if I could I'd sell the marble on this temple and print books. That was that temple. So he had the title for that and some of the other properties. And so Ananta Vasudev, he was, as I said, the more popular. Devotees were rallying around him. But this other devotee, Kunjavihar, he did it through the courts. He litigated. He went to court. And in the court, he tried to establish that he contested the legitimacy of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's will. And his argument went that he received those properties in the service of God, so therefore they're not his properties to say what should be done with them. They're properties, they're God's properties, they're Krishna's properties, so therefore he didn't have a right to say what should be done with them after his demise, like that. So anyway, that was as if he did. So he took it to court. And initially, the court ruled in favor of Ananta Vasudev. But then he appealed it to a higher court, and the higher court ruled in favor of him and awarded one-third of the properties to Ananta Vasudev and two-thirds of the properties to this Kunjavihari. Following that, Ananta Vasudev fell down, and then the whole thing that's when the whole Gaudiya Math just fell apart. A lot of, all the senior sannyasi disciples just broke off into their own little moths, and there was no unity, you know, from that point onwards. So anyway, getting back to the point of our story here, that so I guess that's who he's referring to here. That's who Srila Prabhupada's referring to, because this particular fellow, this Kunja Vihari, was Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's secretary. So through whatever, you know, diplomacy, this, that, the other thing, he obviously, well, it's not clear. We don't know if Prabhupada is, Prabhupada says, Bhaktisiddhanta, he wanted to enjoy the property of the spiritual master, being merciful towards him, gave him the property, but not so, whether that was a post, it's Prabhupada in this sense is making it, is it a post-humist gave him the property, or a pre-humist gave him the property? I don't know. You know, whether that's which is being referred to here, whether it was something that happened to a certain, you know, that by letting him have control of the properties while he was still alive, because he was managing, you know, for him, or whether it's just referring to the, in an esoteric way, that, you know, there's that phrase, not even a blade of grass can move contrary to the will of the Supreme Lord. So in other words, when the spiritual master passes away, not that he's gone, I mean, he's still here, and he's still, you know, Krishna is in control, and the spiritual master is still, it's his movement. So it could be referring to, in that sense, that he allowed that to happen. This, you know, he was his disciple, and he had so much desire to get the property, and so he was allowed to take control of that property. But the point that's being made here, that Prabhupada makes here, is that he got the property. He got the temporary property, but not the power to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. So, you know, he didn't really gain. Is that Prabhupada, I think, once or twice quoted that phrase from the Bible, what does a man profit if he gains the whole world, but suffers the loss of his eternal soul? So that's, the, you know, can be, is applicable here in the case of this particular devotee. He gained the property of the spiritual master, but he lost his spiritual life. You know, he didn't have the power to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. So we could see that, you know, that's what you're not supposed to do. Whereas, on the other hand, Srila Prabhupada, of course, you know, he's not really, he doesn't mention himself here, and I'm sure he's not even thinking of himself, but he was just the opposite. Prabhupada didn't have any of the, you know, Prabhupada didn't inherit anything from the Gaudiya Math, except for problems. You know, Prabhupada was a member, but he was never, you know, one of the, like, in-group. He wasn't part of the preaching activities. He was a grihastha. You know, he was initiated, but he had a family, he was doing business, he was living outside. And when the Gaudiya Math started to break up and everything, I mean, they didn't help him. You know, at one point, Prabhupada tried to live in the ashram of one of his god brothers, and he was requested to, actually, and he was, I think he had the service of editing this particular sannyasi's magazine or newspaper that he was putting out. So, you know, he was doing a lot of work, and Prabhupada requested if he could get some enough money to buy two dhotis and a couple quartas, I think it was, because he had the clothes he was wearing weren't appropriate for, you know, conducting his service, you know, when he had to see people and this and that. And he was denied that request. So, you know, Prabhupada got no help whatsoever from pretty much any of his god brothers. You know, when he did everything basically on his own without any help from the Gaudiya Math. Even when he got here to America, I'm sure there's more details that I'm forgetting about what things that happened while he was still in India. But what I am remembering is even when he got here to America, and he would write back to them, you know, and say, could you send me this? You know, I need some kartals or madungas or this, or, you know, some Ayurvedic medicine or whatever. Somebody send somebody to assist me. It was always, no, we can't help you. Oh, funds. He wanted to, at one point when he was in Manhattan, he wanted to try to get some funds, money together to establish a temple there. And it was always either no or no response. So we got no help. But just unlike Kunja Vihari, you know, this other personality that's being mentioned here, Prabhupada, he did get the mercy. He got the special mercy of the power to preach, you know, the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And Prabhupada says that special mercy of the power to preach is given to a devotee who does not want anything material from his spiritual master, but wants only to serve him. So that's certainly, that sentence there certainly describes Srila Prabhupada perfectly. He didn't want anything material from his spiritual master, but he only wanted to serve him. And as a result, Prabhupada became empowered to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And we could see that, you know, Prabhupada became, unlike Ravana, who totally became destroyed, you know, what to speak of, he had no spiritual life, but he even lost his material life, he got killed by Ramachandra. And unlike this godbrother of his who's referring to, who got the property but lost his spiritual life, Prabhupada, because he had no desire other than to serve his spiritual master, he didn't want anything material from him. And the end result was that Prabhupada flourished. You know, as I said, he became empowered to preach Krishna, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, which he did. And he became opulent too. Prabhupada sometimes would comment about that, you know, how he just started with 40 rupees. Actually, he didn't start with anything, because the 40 rupees he brought across, you know, with him from India, he couldn't change. They didn't exchange rupees in those days. So basically, he came with nothing, no money. He came with a bag of cereal and a trunk of books. That was his material possessions. You know, so he came with nothing, and he started with nothing. But then, you know, he within a few short years, he developed a movement which was, you know, net worth millions of dollars. And you know, sometimes he would refer to that. I've become bigger than Birla, because Birla is just on one continent and we're all over the world, things like that. So, yeah, that's true. And the opulence of the pure devotee of Prabhupada is, we can understand from this purport, text and purport, is not material. It clearly says here. But such, you know, when the opulences that are received by a devotee, when it says, on the other hand, devotees like Prahlad and Dhruva achieved extraordinary material opulence, but such opulences were not Maya Sukha. You know, they're not material. They're spiritual. Well, it doesn't say, it refers to them, it says material opulences, but at the same time, it says they're not Maya Sukha. They're not illusory happiness. And then this next sentence sort of gives us some insight into that, well, how that is. It says, when a devotee acquires unparalleled opulences, they are the direct gifts of the goddess of fortune who resides in the heart of Narayan. See, so it's part of a devotional reciprocation. You know, the devotee is very, very sincere to serve Narayan, and Lakshmi becomes pleased, and therefore she facilitates the service of that very, very sincere devotee. Once again, that's Prabhupada's, you know, the super prime example of that. And so, you know, there we have it, the two extremes, you know. On the one hand, you know, personalities not understanding at all, you know, who God is and how to relate to God's property, and the ends in destruction. And on the other hand, Srila Prabhupada, the other opposite end of the spectrum, perfectly understanding, you know, Bhoktaram Jagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Yajgyavashantimuchati, perfectly understanding who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, and that everything belongs to Him, and everything should be used in His service for His pleasure, and the result being that, you know, his spiritual life flourishes even more, if that's possible, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, and he became opulent at the same time. So, of course, we have to try to follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. And if we do, then, you know, something like that will hopefully happen in our lives, or individually or collectively as a movement. Something like that will happen to our movement. If we have no other desire, we should have no other desire. You know, we shouldn't want anything material from this Krishna consciousness movement. We should only want to serve the spiritual master, you know, very sincerely, without any material motivation. And if we do like that, then the same thing should happen to this, to our movement, that what happened to Srila Prabhupada and, you know, his career when preaching Krishna consciousness. And actually, we could see that, I think there's some indication that it does work like that. And I'll use Sankirtan devotees as an example, because those of you, which is pretty much everybody who have done Sankirtan book distribution, specifically I'm talking about, you know that when you're out there, you're completely helpless. You're completely helpless. And you really have no control, you know, over whether somebody's going to take a book or not take a book, or what kind of donation they're going to give. And, you know, and to devotees who haven't gone out on Sankirtan, when they, you know, every morning when they hear the scores read off, they might think that it's sort of like a secure thing, that because the scores sound very similar from one morning to the next. Like you hear Satchitananda, 32 big books, $137. I mean, I can almost write his score on the score sheet before he goes out that day, you know, because it's so similar every day like that. But you don't know what goes on out there. It sounds like it's very stable and, okay, yeah, it's, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know, I can't think of an example of what it'd be like. But when you're out there, you realize, whoa, this is totally just Krishna's mercy that you do anything, that even a book goes out of it, that you get a donation. And it happens in all sorts of, like, very different ways from day to day. But the reason I'm making this point is that the Sankirtan devotees are really trying to surrender. Not myself excluded at this point. I'm talking about, like, Vijay and Sachinoy and all the other Sankirtan devotees. But, you know, you really have to surrender in your sadhana and then when you go out there as well. And what the result that the Sankirtan devotees are getting is an example of this, I believe. That's an example of Lakshmi Devi. You know, when a devotee, he's acquiring not unparalleled opulences, but these donations, the ability to distribute books and get donations, is a direct gift of the goddess of fortune who resides in the heart of Narayan, and that's why it's so stable, because it's coming from Krishna, and it's coming from Lakshmi Devi or Krishna himself, who is the supreme controller. You see, and that's why. Whether the economy's up, the economy's down. Actually, the economy's down now, and Sachidanoy is doing better than he did when the economy was up. So, makes sense out of that. It doesn't make any sense materially, but it makes perfect sense spiritually. Why? Because Krishna's in control. That's why Prabhupada could say on one occasion, a devotee wrote Prabhupada, there was some rumor going around that when there'd be a war, and after the war, that would be the end of book distribution, you know, because people wouldn't have money or whatever like that. So that rumor got around to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada got very upset. He said, "Who is the rascal, you know, saying this in my name?" And he said, you know, that was his response. And he said, "Actually, you'll always, as long as the devotees remain sincere, you'll always have customers for my books. You know, there'll always be customers for my books." So what does that mean? You know, well, that means that it's not under the control of the external energy. You know, Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritim ashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim aviyam. That daivim prakritim ashrita, that it's under the control of the internal potency of the Lord. It's not under the jurisdiction of the external potency. Therefore, if the devotees remain sincere, not just about distributing books, about just our general activities, if we remain sincere about following the regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds, you know, doing what Prabhupada told us to do, coming to the program and doing Harinam and book distribution and prasadam distribution, all the things, exactly what Prabhupada told us, that the movement will be successful. You know, just like you said, they'll always have customers for my books. Well, the same way, you just broaden out the example. The movement will be successful. Why? Because it's under the control of the internal potency of the Lord, which is not under the control of the external potency of the Lord. And, you know, it's basically the plain and simple language is, if you please Krishna, things work, because Krishna is in control. Krishna is the supreme controller. So if we please Krishna, everything will work out fine. That's the, you know, that's the main point, basic point there, the underlying principle. So, much to my amazement, it's 8:13. You know, I don't know where all the minutes go, but the clocks don't lie generally. So I'll stop there and ask if there's any questions or comments or corrections or anything. Vijay Prabhu.
Statement by Srila Prabhupada. He said that if you distribute books, then Lakshmi Devi becomes your treasurer. Because if you distribute books, Krishna's pleased. You please Krishna, then Lakshmi Devi is pleased. And just a little comment.
Yeah, further confirmation on that same point. Sachinoy Prabhu.
In your presentation about the analysis that you made of two devotees, Kunja Vihari and Ananta Vasudev, who were like the main top leaders of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, so you also mentioned that Srila Prabhupada was not like part of the elite at that time. He was like an outsider working, sincerely following what he's supposed to be doing at that time. So can we by this example, can we also say that sometimes in our society it's so big that not necessarily mean that those who are in, that apparently we might be in, but we might not necessarily be 100%. Can we take something like that and maybe someone else?
I know where you're coming from. So it's true that there might be some very sincere devotees out, quote unquote, out there, you know, who aren't like devotees who are living in the temple community close by or coming to the program every morning, and they might be very sincere and very Christian conscious, and that's true. But should we do that? Should we, you know, should we think that, well, I guess it's okay to do that because, you know, they're doing it. And Prabhupada did it. Prabhupada didn't live in the, you know, in the circles of the disciples of his spiritual master's organization. So I guess it's okay. The point was, the real issue is, what is the instruction of the spiritual master? You see, Prabhupada was a grihastha, and he had to maintain a family. And even the God brothers, you know, disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta, they went to Bhaktisiddhanta at different points in time, and they said, hey, you know, this Abhay Babu, he's really good. He plays Madanga. He gives class nicely. He's very, he should be, you know, we should bring him in closer. We should, you know, pull him in, and he should become like a one of the inner members. You know, they were suggesting that to Bhaktisiddhanta. Okay, yeah, so they were trying to get him more involved, and they were trying to, you know, get him. And Bhaktisiddhanta's response was, leave him alone. In due time, you know, he'll do everything. You see? So that was, he had the, at least the, what'd you say? Yeah, the vision. He had the blessings of a spiritual master to remain in that situation. Whereas Prabhupada, you know, his instruction to us is not completely different, but, you know, it's like a different, slightly different mood that Prabhupada encouraged that, you know, devotees, if it is possible, certainly for devotees who are already within the, you know, the inner thing of ISKCON, shouldn't move out. We shouldn't distance ourselves, but should stay in there. Yeah, something you can add something to make it a bit clearer.
Oh, you know, on that point also, we should take a look at Prabhupada's background, which was that his father was a pure devotee of Krishna.
Mm.
And from the very beginning of his birth, he was taught about Krishna consciousness. So that was a big boon for Srila Prabhupada. Whereas us, we were born in families that didn't believe in Krishna in any shape or form. You know, most of us came up eating meat, taking intoxication, doing the most abominable things. So, you know, if we're in that condition, this is where we were born and taught and raised, it's pretty risky to think that, you know, we can, at some part in our life, just kind of jump into Krishna consciousness. So without the association of devotees, for us it's a very dangerous and a precarious position. Most likely we won't make it.
Yeah, Prabhupada had a lot more cultural support there, you know, in the form of, like, as Suvas Prabhu pointed out, his father was a pure devotee. He was living in India in a time when it wasn't so, you know, materialistic like it is out there now. And so those things, those were also factors there. Okay. Anybody else? Oh, Mother Omkar would like to say something.
I wanted to make a comment about Lakshmi and Lakshmi Narayan. I have two Sheilas. One is a Lakshmi Narayan Shalagram Sheila and a Govardhan Sheila. And when I was gifted Lakshmi Narayan Sheila, I thought, Lakshmi Devi. For me, Lakshmi is not about money and financial opulence. Lakshmi Devi means spiritual opulence. That's the best thing in my life. So I would pray to my Lakshmi Narayan Sheila and ask for spiritual opulence and spiritual blessings, because that to me is the best opulence. To me, that's my Lakshmi. And when I received both Sheilas, I got a lot of benediction and mercy. And two examples are that when I received my Govardhan Sheila, I was offering incense and I prayed. One time I had a dream about Srinathji, and I was offering incense, and I asked my Sheilas, I haven't had a dream for over a year and a half. Please, may I have a dream about Sheila? The very next night, I had a dream about Sheila. And then the same thing about going to St. Louis. I had prayed for spiritual strength, for something extra special, and I got on my knees. I folded my hands. I asked for mercy. The next day is when I got the email, and it all led to St. Louis. So it's about asking for spirituality and nothing material, because those material things are secondary. And when you're spiritually happy, you really, really know that that is the real thing in Krishna consciousness and the honest fulfillment. And those material things are just really not what satisfy you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Yeah, so anyway, just, you know, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam Yejana Paripashate Tesham Nikchab Yuktanam Yogasham Abhahamyam. Krishna says that somebody who meditates on me without deviation, he preserves what they have and they carry what they lack. So devotees don't have to worry, you know, we just do our service, try to be favorably engaged in devotional service, and Krishna will take care of everything else. We don't have to worry. I'll have to stop there because we're kind of over time already. But thank you very much. Gunthra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.